Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. It is Senate Bill 1, the first priority of the Ohio Senate. It is a reorganization of the Department of Education. If passed, the power now held by the Ohio Board of Education would be redirected to a new executive position appointed by the governor. Control of education policy would then be placed under the control of the executive branch of state government. This is something governors, both Democratic and Republican, have wanted for a long time. Under the proposed changes, the board would still hire a superintendent, but that person would serve in an advisory capacity, no longer leading the department as far as education policy is concerned. It's a big story at the State House, and joining us to discuss what's going on there is Anna Staver. She is a political reporter for the USA Today's Ohio Bureau, and she covers State House politics for the Columbus Dispatch. Anna, welcome back to All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the current system. We have a State Board of Education, some of them elected, some of them appointed. How is education policy set right now in the state of Ohio?
Well, it's a partnership between the State Board of Education and your local Board of Education. So the way I like to say it is, like, let's say we were going on a road trip from Columbus to California. The State Board of Education sets curriculum requirements. So they're going to say, we need to get to California. We have to maybe stop in Indianapolis, maybe stop in Denver. So here are the sites you need to see. But how you get there, what car you choose to drive in, so like what textbook, that is all set by your local board. So they don't mandate a single like history book you have to buy or how you're going to teach English. It's just like, these are the goals, these are the landmarks, and please get to California by the end of the year. And so that's how it works right now. And like you said, the board is elected in districts from around the state, and then the governor appoints 8 of them. So the governor does have a voice in education policy. 8 of 19 is a big chunk of the board. Not a majority, but a hefty chunk.
Yep. And they also set who's in charge of assessing schools and testing to make sure students are meeting those assessments.
Yeah. And they also do things like teacher license issues. So if there's a teacher accused of misconduct, so license suspension, license revocation, like they handle all of that too.
So what would this change do? What would be different?
So that teacher stuff, the licensing and how like we handle misconduct, all of that would stay with the State Board of Education. The curriculum element is what would not stay with the State Board. That would go to this new director under the governor's office.
And the name of the department would change as well.
Yeah. So the bill is a little over 2,000 pages in length, but I say there's about 30 pages of substance, and the rest of it is changing the Ohio Department of Education and code to the Department of Education and Workforce.
Why add workforce to this bill? What's the goal there?
Okay, so I also like to call it the Department of Due because I enjoy that. So in the Department of Due, there would be 2 deputy directors, and that would be new. So there'd be one for traditional K-12 education, and then there'd be a director for workforce development. This is going to be your trade schools, your sort of alternative pathways, post-secondary. And there's a real push for this, and this is actually the least controversial part of the legislation. Like, everyone thinks we should have more of a focus on those technical educations that may not include college, particularly with like Intel and Honda and those kinds of investments. There's a mismatch, according to big business, between what they need and what Ohio has in terms of education.
Now, you have kids in school.
My
kids are out of school now, but many of our listeners have kids in school. How will this make their lives different, those students in the classroom?
So day to day, you probably won't notice a change right away because unless the governor, this new director, decides to make substantive changes to curriculum. Now, that is one of the concerns that like Democrats and public education advocates have, that, I mean, education is already politicized, if we're being totally honest, but giving it to a governor could perhaps make it more politicized. And while you might not have concerns about a Governor Mike DeWine, we don't know who's going to replace him afterwards. And so the governor appoints that director. They serve at the pleasure of the governor. And if the governor wants to make sweeping changes to curriculum requirements, that would be a lot easier than it would be under the State Board of Education model.
So what are supporters of this change arguing? Why does this have to happen now? is it because Mike DeWine's starting his second term? This is a chance for a new governor to chart his own course. What are they saying? And they also mentioned test scores and absentee rates as well.
Yeah. So the pandemic definitely saw a spike in chronic absenteeism. It's about 1 in 3 kids at the last survey was chronically absent, which means they missed at least 10% of the school year. Our national education, the NAEP scores, which are national standardized testing, we've dropped on those, but so has like the rest of the country. Basically, the pandemic was hard on everyone. But a lot of it's also focused on the State Board of Education. So I don't know if listeners have been following this, but 2 years ago, just about 2 years ago, the previous state superintendent announced he was leaving.
Yes, Paolo De Maria.
Yes. And they started to search for a new one. They hired somebody who ethically potentially shouldn't have been hired. He resigned within 2 weeks. It was like a whole thing. And they still haven't picked a new one. They're still trying to decide how to hire the search firm to search for the new candidate. And there's an argument that, like, you know, there's nothing wrong, according to advocates of this bill, with Dr. Stephanie Siddons, the current interim director, but she is an interim director, which sort of hamstrings her just in terms of making sweeping changes. And they argue that, like, the state board has sort of fallen down on its duty of getting somebody in during a really critical time for children's education.
And you could say, you know, now it might, because they don't have a superintendent, it might be the time to make these changes, because frankly, it's going to be hard to recruit somebody for this job if they don't think they're going to have any authority if this bill passes.
Yeah. So the State Board of Education has kind of like has said that as much. They were kind of putting on pause their new search. But the back out of the person who was going to be the state superintendent happened back in June. And this bill didn't get like formally introduced until November. So they could have moved then. But yeah, I think the pay scale for the state superintendent will change. The responsibilities will change. Like, people who might be interested in that position today might want that governor's appointment tomorrow.
Yes. The fans of this current system, the State Board of Education, why do they think that's the better way than to have one point person who is in charge of education policy, and they can either be fired or reappointed?
Yeah, so you have the argument of efficiency and more able to make change. But then on the opposite side, it's they talk about public representation. So if you have a problem with the statewide curriculum, going to your local school board isn't really going to affect change, right? Because they're only deciding how to implement it. But the State Board of Education is a public body. They deliberate in public, they take votes in public, and they also have public commentary. Now, as someone who sat through several dozen hours of State Board of Education public commentary, it can go on, but it is a place for parents to go if they have concerns about a particular policy. And the argument is, should we be taking power away from a publicly elected board and giving it to a governor's appointee?
The reality is that when you go into the voting booth, you don't know who these people are running for State Board of Education. Now, there was a state senator, Teresa Federer from Toledo,
yes,
who is now on the board, who ran, and she was
right,
recognizable. But most of the time you see the names there, it's like, who is this person?
Yeah, it depends. I think there's a lot of undervote, which means people skip over those races because they don't know how to vote. They're also nonpartisan races, mm-hmm, so you don't know party affiliation, which can complicate, like, if, you know, a basic concept of maybe what somebody might believe. Now, I know who my State Board of Education member is, but
do.
I'm definitely unique in that sense. So there is that question. They also represent very large areas. It's 3 state Senate districts.
Okay.
You know, they represent a substantial number of people. They aren't paid very much. There's not a lot of paid staff. So there's an argument that, like, the way they're constructed right now sort of hamstrings their ability to be a more professional board.
Dare I ask if the state's school districts are gerrymandered?
I think not in the tradition. They
But if they include Senate districts, and they're gerrymandered, so by default, I guess they are. Anyway,
yeah.
we're getting off into everything goes back to redistricting at some point. We are talking about state education policy here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about this potential reorganization of how policy is set in the state of Ohio. There is politics involved here. 3 seats switched from, even though they're nonpartisan, they switched to, you could argue, more progressive people,
yeah,
supported by the teachers union. That's an undercurrent here.
Yeah, but I would keep in mind that it didn't change the overall partisan makeup of the board, because those 8 governor's appointees tend to be more conservative. Actually, the governor had to let go a couple of appointees about a year ago because of their position on a anti-racism resolution. It was a whole kerfluffle.
Yep.
But so it did allow these people to win against more conservative candidates? Absolutely. But the overall makeup of the board still skews Republican.
Now, there was that issue over support for anti-racism provisions. We have transgender issues that come up in schools. Would that lessen? Would that be less of an issue, perhaps, if this is out of the board's control and into the governor's office?
Well, in the sense that I probably wouldn't have to sit through like 25 hours of testimony again, probably. Yeah. But that is the question. Like, where do you take those concerns? You know, lawmakers say you can take them to them because they can set standards. Like, actually, Ohio does not permit the state board to set health education standards. Like, lawmakers like to get involved in this sometimes, rightly or wrongly. But there is that question of where do we send the public if they have a grievance with curriculum? And there's some discussion about preserving some of that within the state board in SB1 as a change.
Also, what are other states doing? Is Ohio an outlier with the State Board of Education? Are we kind of the way most states are?
It's kind of a mixed bag. There are a lot of states that do it as an appointee within a cabinet position. I will point out that, like, the Department of Medicaid, the Department of Health, a lot of the big agencies here in Ohio are cabinet-level appointees. So education's kind of an outlier here, just based on our structure. But it varies from state to state. Like, we wouldn't be unusual either way, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. government has a Secretary of Education that sets national education policy.
Who is a presidential appointee?
Now, this was brought up in the lame duck session in November.
Yes.
It didn't go anywhere, and this bill has stripped out two controversial aspects of what was in the bill in November. One is a prohibition of transgender athletes competing, and also exemption from vaccine mandates. That's not in this bill, correct?
Correct. So those were put in the final hours of the legislative session to sort of sweeten the deal, I think, for House Republicans. They were trying to get it across the finish line. It had passed the Senate. And at like 10 o'clock at night on the last day, they offered this as sort of like, you know, final and best offer to get this across the finish line. And when I talked with Senator Reinicke, who is the bill's sponsor, he was back then and now, he said, I wanted to just start with a clean education bill. Is he opposed to adding that in if it gets it across the finish line? Not necessarily. But opening offer is this cleaner version. But I will say the homeschool provisions that the House requested during lame duck are in this new version.
What are those?
It has to do with certain protections for homeschool children so right now, we require that a certified teacher or assess a homeschool child at the end of the year, or they take certain standardized tests. This would relax some of those provisions for homeschool children, and there were a few additional protections. But we don't, truth be told, we don't have a lot of monitoring of homeschool. We don't oversee curriculum the same we do for chartered private schools, which are the ones that take vouchers. So it's sort of like if you're not taking any state money, there's not a lot of state oversight.
There are other education bills out there.
Yes.
The backpack bill is a school funding package. Is there any chance, especially with a speaker who is now has to answer to some Democrats, Jason Stevens, that this could all be lumped into one bill or one kind of big compromise between all lawmakers and have a major I don't want to say overhaul, but a major education policy shift?
It's possible. It's also entirely possible that it'll get woven into the budget. That's an entirely appropriate place to do this because the restructuring does change how pay scales and who's where and what people are where, which feels like a very budget thing. You could add the backpack bill, which is universal voucher, would absolutely have a large funding component. There is a Senate bill, which is kind of an educational savings account bill. I could see any of these things actually just making it into the state budget.
Now, the Ohio Constitution calls for a State Board of Education.
Yes.
It calls for the State Board of Education to hire a superintendent.
Yes.
Any chance this gets challenged in court if the superintendent's power is basically, much of it is taken away?
Well, it says that the legislature gets to decide what powers they have. So I think probably not in that sense. So lawmakers kind of get to decide what they do, but we just constitutionally have to have one. And truth be told, like, teacher licensure and revocation is a really serious job. Like, I don't want to discount that as, like, the peanuts that are left over.
Yeah.
That's really important.
Okay. Anna Staver, State House reporter, covers the State House for the Columbus Dispatch, works for the USA Today Ohio Bureau. Thanks for joining us on All Sides.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we'll hear from the teachers union, get their take on what this overhaul would mean for teachers in the classroom and their students. When All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Education has been a large priority for the Ohio Senate, and now it is Senate Bill number one. It's its top priority if you look at the priorities in terms of how the bills are numbered. This bill claims to introduce much-needed reforms to Ohio education, but many are skeptical as to how shifting power to the Department of Education will address weaknesses prevalent in the education system. Again, to remind folks, this bill would appoint a Secretary of Education, a Director of Education, appointed by the governor, and strip power from the State Board of Education, at least as far as how education policy is set. Joining us now is the president of the Ohio Education Association, Scott DeMauro. His organization represents 120,000 school teachers in the state of Ohio. Scott, welcome to All Sides.
Mike, good to be with you today.
Why is it, where do you stand on this? I take it you support keeping the power of education policy with the State Board of Education, correct?
Yeah, our position on the bill is we're actually an interested party because we are open to the conversation to say if there are better ways to structure how the Department of Education is run and it helps achieve the policy aims that we all share, ensuring that every single student is in a well-funded public education system that meets their needs and helps them to learn and grow and achieve their potential. I don't know that the org chart at ODE is necessarily our primary focus. You know, we don't think that there are, you know, too many problems with the current system, but we're open to conversation about how to make it better.
The backdrop of this, and I talked to Anna Staver about this, is that three members of the State Board of Education recently elected had the support of the teachers union, and many feel this is what has prompted this latest effort. It's been tried before, but this latest effort to sort of shift control to the governor's office. Do you see that as a valid concern?
Well, I mean, we had that question when we saw the bill dropped ourselves, and especially the rush to try to get it passed very quickly during the lame duck session of the last General Assembly. You know, the timing was curious. But we also know that this is an idea that proponents of the bill have been talking about for a while. And again, I think the question is, you know, less about, you know, what the structure needs to be and more should be focused on the policies. We have a lot of really good people on the State Board of Education. And I think one of the things that was really encouraging about the last election is that three new people who were elected are all people that have education background. They're connected to our public schools. Two of them are former teachers themselves. And we think it's critically important as we're making decisions about the future of education policy in the state that teachers have a voice, that other people who work on the front lines with our students every day are heard and listened to as really important decisions are made.
Would teachers have as much of a voice if it was one person in the governor's office, regardless of whoever is governor or the party that's in control? Would they have as much of a voice, do you believe?
I don't think so. I think the benefit of the current system, and again, this is in the Ohio Constitution. This was, the current system was created through a constitutional amendment passed all the way back in the 1950s. Is that it does ensure representation based on geography from all different parts of the state. By design, it is intended to be diverse, representing diverse viewpoints and diverse perspectives. And through our elected State Board of Education members, we have an opportunity to engage in conversations about the future of education in the state. We also have a good working relationship with the Ohio Department of Education. These are people whose mission every day is to support the work of our local schools across the state. So concentrating that power into the hands of one person, I think could have some negative consequences when it comes to cutting off opportunities for collaboration and discussion.
The argument against leaving it in the hands of a 19-member school board, and I've covered school boards over my career, and it can be torturous trying to get things through, is if you have one person, the policy can be clearly stated and clearly implemented. Now, that one person is a bit dangerous because you don't know how that person's going to be one way or the other. But is that efficiency worth trying, having one person accountable to the governor who's then accountable to the voters, setting education policy for the state?
Well, remember, the only reason that we have a 19-member board is because Governor Voinovich wanted to have more influence over the State Board of Education. And as a result, so they added 8 gubernatorial appointees back in the 1990s. I think that is the source of much of the inefficiency. And then I think more recently, while the state board over the years has done really good work and they implement rules that are passed by the legislature and they oversee licensure issues and they adopt learning standards and they establish a strategic plan for the future of our state. You know, unfortunately, some of these culture war issues have been injected into the board and I think have really distracted the board from some of these things. The fact that this 19-member state board spent so much time debating a resolution that was really about, you know, how to address students who are largely marginalized, you know, our gay and trans students. And I think that was really unfortunate. The board does need to be focused on education issues and ensuring that every single student is supported.
We're talking about education policy and who controls education policy in the state of Ohio. Senate Bill 1 would shift that control to an executive position reporting to the governor. And right now we have a 19-member State Board of Education and a superintendent that sets the policy for the state of Ohio. Our guest is Scott DeMauro, president of the Ohio Education Association, which represents some 120,000 teachers across the state, educators across the state. You talk about those culture war issues. Would having one person solve some of that, or would it possibly make it worse if that one person's in charge of setting how transgender athletes are treated in schools? How, like we look at what's happening in Florida with an AP course about African American studies and how that became a hot potato. Which is the better, which is least political, I guess?
Well, there is something inherently political about putting these kinds of decisions in the hands of the governor. It's also the reality is that most significant education policy decisions are passed through law by the legislature. And so to a degree, the governor already has tremendous influence over the direction of education through the budget that he proposes and in deciding to sign or veto legislation coming out of the House and Senate related to public education policy. So I don't know that changing the structure really changes that. The other question that I have, I know many of the proponents of the bill have talked about the need to focus more on workforce development and ensuring that all of our students are career ready as well as college ready. We couldn't agree with that more. But again, changing the governance structure, I don't know that that itself necessarily gets us to that. Let's look at how our budget dollars are allocated. Let's look at the kinds of supports that are provided to our excellent career centers across the state and do more to ensure that there is funding for career and technical education in Ohio.
Would putting the control of the education system in Ohio in the control of the governor, would it raise the profile of education policy in voters' minds? I mean, there's so many things that go into how you pick a governor, whether it's job creation, the economy, social issues like abortion rights, education. Because you have a state board of education, I don't think the governor really has to answer many questions about that when he or she is running. Would this change that? Would this make it a higher issue, make it more relevant to the voters of Ohio?
I think it depends on the governor, and I think it depends on the overall dynamic in the state. This governor has chosen not to put a big focus on education policy, I think has tended to be a little bit more deferential to the legislature. But when we think about previous governors like Governor Kasich and Governor Strickland and Governor Voinovich, these were governors who really did make education policy in one direction or another the cornerstone of their administration. So I don't think that changing this aspect of education governance really makes a difference one way or the other. The governor already has tremendous power through his bully pulpit, but also through the legislative authority that he already holds in setting the direction for education.
Yeah, we've seen that over the past 20 so years, what the governor and legislature have tried to do for school funding to try to meet the constitutional mandate that all schools must be treated fairly. They're still in violation technically, but they've tried at least to remedy the situation. You are a high school teacher. How does this affect what you do in your classroom?
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And one of the reasons that we're not diving in to say that that this bill, one way or the other, is a big priority for us is because we do want to stay focused on those kinds of education policy and resource issues that are so critical. The org structure at ODE doesn't have a lot of impact on me and what happens in my classroom. That said, if you take away the authority of the State Board of Education and setting learning standards for the state, you know, those academic goals and benchmarks that are so critical, that process right now builds in tremendous opportunities for stakeholder input. And if it's all in the hands of a gubernatorially appointed official, some kind of bureaucrat, you know, in state government, I would really be concerned that that opportunity for stakeholder input in those critical decisions would be lost.
You also, the policy could change every 4 years or every 8 years if the governor serves two terms.
And there is probably nothing that frustrates my colleagues around the state more than seeing this push and pull every so often, a new initiative, a new priority, saying we've got to focus on this as opposed to that. We've seen a lot of that related to standardized testing in recent years, a lot of focus on literacy, which is important, but I think in some ways losing sight of the larger picture of creating lifelong learners in our schools and empowering our educators to do the job that they were trained and hired to do, which is to give every single student that opportunity in the classroom to meet their potential.
Yeah, just look at how many times we've changed the format of how we grade schools. We went away, we had number grades for a while, then we had letter grades. Now we're to like, we are like Yelp review stars, right? Aren't we like 4 stars, 5 stars? Is that how we're grading schools now? Is that the new system?
There's been a change in the accountability system. We think that the new system is better than the A to F letter grades. But again, those decisions were decisions made by the legislature, not by the State Board of Education.
The bottom line is local school boards really run their local schools, right? How much of an impact does the State Board have on the local school district? Because they're the ones who actually hire the teachers. They're the ones who are more answerable to the, if that's a word, to the voters. The voters know who your school board members for the most part, local school board members.
Yeah, local school boards are absolutely essential. They hire the superintendent. The superintendent, in turn, is responsible for hiring teachers and staff. Local school board sets curriculum and decides how to allocate the funds that they have available and oversee facilities. So local boards are really important. They're closest to what's happening in the classroom. But state policy does have a significant impact. And one of the things that I think is important about the current system is that there is an accountability component that is important, not just in terms of the report cards for public schools, but Ohio has a lot of choice options, you know, and you know, we see with charter schools and with taxpayer dollars being diverted to support families who've chosen to send their kids to private schools, it is important that you have a State Board of Education and a Department of Education that is ensuring, to the extent possible, we've got a level playing field and that there is accountability for learning across the board.
Do the average voters, do the average parents really pay attention to who's on their State Board of Education? They're going to maybe call their principal at their school first. Then they're going to start with the teacher, call the principal, maybe go to the school, local school board, the superintendent. I think the State Board of Education is pretty down on that phone chain.
That may be true. You could make the same argument about how many people know who their state representative or their state senator, you know, are as well. The thing about that is that the members of the State Board of Education do know that their responsibility is in leading on education issues, and the people that are doing a good job, and some of the elected members of the state school board, who I think have been most successful, are very deliberate in spending time in school districts, talking to superintendents, talking to teachers, talking to parents, and talking to kids about what's going on to help that inform their decision making at the state board.
You know, other things in the bill, one would sort of loosen regulation on homeschooling. Does the OEA have any position on that?
I think, especially given news that we just saw come out over the weekend about this homeschool network promoting, you know, Nazi ideology, you know, in a portion of Ohio, I worry a little bit about, you know, the potential for abuse of that system. The reality is that homeschooling is already dramatically unregulated in the state. I don't know how much, you know, that's going to change one way or the other. But one thing that I do have very serious concerns about, and again, this is a legislative decision, is ensuring that we're not using taxpayer dollars to subsidize what's happening in homeschools. If somebody wants to choose to homeschool their child, that's fine. But don't make me, as an Ohio taxpayer, pay for it.
But their argument is they're paying school taxes, even though they are homeschooling their children. There should be some subsidy for materials, maybe some training, things like that.
Yeah, and our public education system, which is established by the Constitution of the state of Ohio, sets up education as a public good, something for everyone. And yes, we pay taxes to support our public schools, just like we pay taxes to ensure that we have good roads and that we have a healthcare system and that we have other services that we can rely on.
I'm an eternal optimist. I always hope that there is room for compromise and a bipartisan solution. There are a couple other bills out there. One is the backpack bill, which would allow more funding for vouchers and allow students to go to any school, regardless of the performance of their home school. There's another school fair funding bill out there. Is there any chance that a governor in his final term and a House Speaker who now needs the support of Democrats might come up with a grand bargain on education in Ohio? Could this be an avenue for that?
It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. From our perspective, priority number one needs to be enacting and fully implementing the Fair School Funding Plan. The legislature took an important step on that in the last budget. There's still a ways to go to make sure that the resources are there, that the cost estimates are updated, but really ensuring that regardless of where you are in the state, regardless of your zip code, that you have the resources you need as a student to be successful in our public schools. We already have a lot of options when it comes to private school vouchers in charter schools. There's not a lot of evidence that that system has worked. Rather than expanding private options, let's really focus on ensuring that our public schools have the resources that they need to be successful.
All right, Scott Tomorrow, president of the Ohio Education Association. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Good to be with you.
When we come back, a supporter of the change to shift control of education policy in Ohio from the State Board of Education to the governor's office. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about education policy and who controls education policy in the state of Ohio. The Ohio Senate's proposed restructuring of that power amongst the decision-making bodies has left many people wondering what the bill's ultimate goal is and the implications it will have if it is passed. It would shift control of education policy from the State Board of Education, 19 members, some elected, some appointed by the governor. It would shift control of education policy from that board to the executive branch, to the governor's office, whoever is sitting in the governor's office. Joining us is Greg Lawson, a researcher from the Buckeye Institute, an independent research institution with the goal of advancing free market policy in Ohio. One could say you lean right. And Greg, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be here.
What, you support this, I take it?
I've testified on it. We think the concept is sound. Now, that surprises some people because historically we'd say, boy, you don't want to be throwing things into the executive branch a lot. But one of the challenges that we have seen in education policy is, frankly, a lack of coherence overall. And so we have a situation where we obviously haven't had a permanent superintendent for a prolonged period of time. We obviously had somebody who was appointed, and then that did not work out. So we've really gone over a year now, and we have a situation where, you know, we didn't even have the contract signed with a firm to go and search for the superintendent. We've had a situation where the school board has gotten distracted by a lot of somewhat extraneous social issues, both sort of on the left and the right, but not really focusing like a laser on the things that I think most people really want to see, which is, we need to deal with the problems that we have in our education community today. We have still historic learning loss that has students have suffered as a result of really the COVID closures. We have that problem has really impacted in particular already disadvantaged students. And we need to have a strong sense of leadership somewhere in order to drive the kind of changes that we need, or we really are running the risk of having lost generations of students, students that aren't going to be able to work in the new economy. And that is a tragedy, and we need to have somebody who can bring things together and get things moving.
So how will, let's just take the learning loss during the pandemic, if Governor DeWine had the power to appoint his education secretary or education director, would the learning loss have been less during the pandemic with a state director?
I think what we were looking for is we're looking at an opportunity to close these gaps once we've kind of resumed some more of the normalcy here, and that we would have plans in place, whether it's combinations of some of it could be curriculum, but some of it is also being able to manage the process of looking at how do we deal with transportation issues, which are now an ongoing problem for a lot of school districts, as well as for a lot of folks who are taking advantage of school choice programs in Ohio. We have those kind of problems. How do we, like a laser focus, look at that? I think another thing that we would also be doing is we'd be looking at, and as the way that this bill would restructure the Department of Education, we'd be looking at how do we get things working on the workforce side of things so that we can have the appropriate focus on getting people plugged into the kind of jobs that are coming into Ohio. We have great opportunities coming. We've got things like Intel, of course, that everybody's very excited about, but we're not there yet in terms of being able to produce the workforce that we need to take advantage of this. We need to have that kind of focus. So I don't know that you would have been able to stop the initial amount of learning loss. I think what you would see, though, is the ability to focus more coherently on addressing that rather than getting distracted by extraneous issues. And so we need to close those gaps quickly and then focus on the workforce, too.
But we do see in other states where you have distant different systems, the extraneous issues do cause distractions, whether it's an AP class for African American studies or mask mandates and transgender issues. Those are going to be there. Would it be more easily overcome if it's one person who's in charge, or is it more dangerous if one person is running the show?
Look, there's always going to be a problem. There's no perfect solution. I think anybody who looks for a silver bullet that's going to be able to solve everything in one shot is that's not realistic. And there's going to be downsides. So could you have an adverse outcome? Yes. But I would say that you're having adverse outcomes right now as well. So there are always going to be risks when you make changes. I don't think anybody should go through an illusion that that's not the case. But I think what we need to be able to do is to have the leadership quotient. Is there a risk that somebody isn't going to do it right or might do something controversial? Yes, but that's also why there's provisions in the bill that allow the Senate, for example, to be able to do the advise and consent. The governor's not just going to put somebody in at the head. And in fact, there's two individuals that will work in the regular K-12 and also on the workforce within the newly revamped Department of Education and Workforce. And the Senate's going to be able to oversee who those people are too. So there's going to be a negotiating process between the legislature, which are democratically elected folks,
yep,
who are accountable to voters too, and they'll be able to do that. And that's actually a lot more sway that the legislature is going to have to be able to influence who the governor's in there too. So there's going to be a discussion about that. So it can't solve every possible problem that comes down the pike, and there's always going to be political controversies that happen. But by having a more focused ability, you're going to be able to move beyond those, move through those, I think, more quickly than when you have a more diffuse situation, when you have all of these various board members and we get kind of distracted by other things. Like, you know, we've had this debate about a resolution on supporting the Attorney General's lawsuit on the transgender issue. Whatever one's position is on that issue, the Attorney General's engaged in litigation on that. Does it really make much difference what the school board does in terms of a resolution or not? And I think the answer is not that much of a difference, but it became a very big distraction at a time when we should have been looking at superintendents, when we should have been looking at what are we going to do to get resources in to try to help deal with the learning loss? And instead, we're talking about those other issues.
The argument for the board, 19 members, 8 of whom are appointed by the governor, but still, voters have a voice. Granted, you may not know who your state board of education member is from your district. The districts are quite large, as we heard. But they still, if you wanted to, you could have a voice on education policy directly to your member of the board. We would lose that diffuse but direct communication, not with this system?
Well, it does change that, obviously. But I would also say that certainly some people take advantage of that, and I think there are some board members who are doing good work and trying to be very accessible. But they're also, for the most, all volunteers. They don't have staff. They have Ohio Department of Education staff, but they don't have like individual staff members like even legislators have. So it's a very interesting challenge for them to be able to wrestle with all the various things that are actually put onto their plate. So you can have somebody come and talk to them, and I think that there is obviously merit to that, but what is the ability of them to be able to then effectuate an outcome based on those conversations? And I think that because of the nature of how the board has been structured, it's difficult for them to be able to pull everything together and actually then get the, frankly, the bureaucracy at the department to be able to also fall into line, because there's a lot of different masters, so to speak, when you're dealing with so many different people. So is there a downside to that? Yes, there is, but there's also an advantage of, I think what people really want is they want to be able to know that they're getting the good bang for the buck that they're putting into the education system, because that is the largest non-Medicaid area of the budget, the largest amount of state dollars that we spend goes into education. And I think a lot of people are saying we're not getting what we need. The business community is saying we're not getting the skills that we need for the people that are coming out as products of the system, and we need to do something. So everybody knows there's something maybe not right. I think ultimately what people want is outcomes. And if we get better outcomes, I think that the debate over some of the structural issues is more secondary than primary, because it's really what are the outcomes that we're going to get. And again, I'll also say there's going to be a rulemaking process here. The things aren't just going to happen completely behind closed doors. There's going to be a rulemaking process. The legislature has oversight over rulemaking process and can invalidate rules. In fact, they did invalidate some ODE rules. I think it was either last year or the year before, for the first time in a long time, that was a bipartisan invalidation by the legislature. They'll be able to still do that, and the legislature is obviously democratically accountable. So it's a little more attenuated, perhaps, but it's still there. This notion that you're taking away all accountability, I think, is just not accurate.
One of the critics is, should there be more specifics in this bill as to how the changes can be made and how the lawmakers and the governor can go do their own thing? One of the criticisms is this: the bill isn't specific enough. It's a little too vague. Now, there's an advantage to that. It gives freedom to those to people, to lawmakers, to administrators, to directors, to chart their own course. But it also could lead to mischief. It could lead to abuses and things like that.
Sure. I think that there is room to improve on what was the legislation last year. Senate Bill 1 right now looks a lot like the bill that did not ultimately make it through the lame duck legislative cycle at the end of the year. I know there's going to be discussions. I think the Senate's been pretty clear that they're going to have meetings to try to discuss this with all the various interested parties. I know that they're going to be doing that. So I think, yes, there's probably some additional things that can be done to provide some additional mechanisms of oversight to deal with some of those kind of concerns, both from in terms of what the legislature can do. There may be some modifications to some of the, depending on what kind of packages, rule packages are put together, perhaps some additional, public meeting sort of requirements and things like that. So there's opportunities for the general public to be able to be engaged. So yes, I think there's some work that can be done to add a little bit more. You do want to be careful that you don't take away all the ability to be able to move more quickly to address things as problems emerge in the education space. On the other hand, I also am sensitive to the fact that people want to be able to, on something this important, want to have those pipelines in to have the discussions. So I think that there's room for there to be some additional avenues for both direct public input as well as input from the legislature, so that it's not a situation that just gets taken into a back room somewhere. Deals are made and then put out, and there's just stamps of approval put out there.
We're talking education policy here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. Our guest right now is Greg Lawson. He's a research fellow at the Buckeye Institute. He supports the move to consolidate the policymaking in the state education system into the governor's office and take it away, basically, from the State Board of Education. The governor has a lot of control now over education. We heard from the teachers' union a few minutes ago that the budget and dictates a lot of education policy. The governor appoints 8 members of this board, 8 of the 19, not a majority, but still pretty good number. Is this really going to make a huge difference? Is it just easier for the governor to have one person?
I think, again, like a lot of things, it sort of depends. It depends on what this governor and any future governor decides to do. I think that by streamlining this process and creating that mechanism of more accountability and a more direct line of communication and to some extent control, I think there is a great possibility that we can get more things done. Now, a governor might not choose to use that for a variety of reasons. And, you know, sometimes we see that. We see sometimes, you know, we see Congress a lot of times not use their constitutional powers, and they sort of let the executive do things that they should be doing. So, you know, people can make that choice and politicians can make that choice. And then I think voters should make a decision as to whether or not those are good choices. So, but I think at the end of the day, there is an issue with the fact that, yes, the governor has influence, but I think it's important to note that the even though they have a lot of appointees, that's not the majority of the school board.
Yep.
And you also have situations where, you know, people sometimes, once they're appointed because of the process, yes, they can be taken off the board eventually.
They can do their own thing.
But they can do other things than what the governor even thought. We see that a lot of times happen too. Whereas in the newly envisioned process, there would be an ability for the governor probably to have a more direct role in it rather than just putting somebody on there and then them going to some extent maybe native and not doing the things that were in line with what the governor intended for them to do when he made the appointment. So I think that's an important piece of it too.
The timing of this, three board members elected in November with ties to the support from the teachers union, where it is they lean progressive. Is that coincidence or is that what's put the impetus to get this done?
Well, you know, I think what's a lot of governors have talked about wanting to do something like this. So this is actually, I think there's been a lot of talk that this is a really, you know, it's being rushed through and things like that, and it hasn't been discussed a lot. Well, it has been discussed for years. I mean, Governor Kasich had a proposal that was put out there. It ultimately didn't happen, but he did put it out there. Governor Voinovich certainly had talked about it. I think even Governor Strickland had tried to do some things and actually did some reforms to the Department of Higher Education that weren't exactly the same, but we're in sort of a similar conceptual wheelhouse as to what's being talked about here for K-12. So, you know, I think this is something that's been around for a long time. And I think what you've really seen is, again, there are some frustrations out there from a lot of families. I know the business community is very frustrated and has been very vocal for a while about some of the issues that are going on in education. I think there's also a recognition that, look, I think Intel matters in this conversation because I think there is a knowledge that we don't have the workforce to do it yet, and we need to expedite this process. And while it's not just, obviously, there's community colleges, it's universities, it's there's a whole ecosystem in the education space, both at the primary and secondary, as well as higher education, that needs to get up and running to deal with this. But K-12 is going to be a part of this. If we don't have the foundation there for these students to be able to get the certifications they need, you're going to not be taking advantage of this. So I think there's an impetus from that standpoint far more than anything that might have happened in November.
Here's the bottom line. When you talk about education policy, let's face it, eyes glaze over. It's really just in the weeds, very difficult to understand, and crucially important. But here's what people want. If you're in a nice, wealthy district, you're probably good with your schools, but you're paying, you think, too much in school taxes. If you're in a poor district, the schools aren't performing the way you need, and the buildings are falling apart, and your kids aren't getting the education you need. If you're a business owner trying to attract workers, you're not getting the skills. We have had these things come and go, changes to education policy. How will this one make our education better in the state of Ohio?
Sure. And again, you know, maybe it doesn't. You know, we have to be, we got to be humble enough to understand that maybe it doesn't. But what I would say is we are pretty sure that what the system is now is not getting the answers that people want. And so while we need to be careful and we need to make sure that we have some, we're talking about some of the pipelines for communication from the public and also the legislature in this, we do need to do something different. You know, and it's possible that in 5 to 10 years, you'll find out that this wasn't the be all end all. And there might be further changes. Why there's revised code and things get changed in laws by very nature. But I think that anybody who says that we just need to kind of keep it, you know, pretty similar to what we're doing now runs the risk of keeping the status quo. And we have a status quo now that is just not where we need to be. And especially with some of the opportunities that have been laid in our lap, this would be an opportunity to try to take advantage of it. So the possibility of the more accountability, a direct role that's being played there, I think can work. Will it work? It's going to depend on who those people are. It depends on the heat that's brought and from the legislature and the public. So there's a lot of moving pieces. Yeah. But the potential is there structurally. Now you have to do it. You can build the best institution possible, but people still have to man the institutions.
Greg Lawson, research fellow at the Buckeye Institute. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides. We'll continue to monitor what is Senate Bill 1 and also the other education legislation and policymaking at the State House here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.